Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 114. This is Dave.
This is Ronnie James Dio.
Wow. Going off the rumor mill. Well done, sir. Barry is not here this week. He'll be back next week, I think. I know he's bummed because he really wanted to be in on this discussion, but life happens. It's all good.
Sucks to be him.
Indeed. We'll just have to drop all the knowledge ourselves. We're screwed. All right, so what did you watch this week, sir?
Okay, I watched a ton.
You watched better quality stuff than I did.
Yeah, well, though, I'll start off with the big release that everyone got to talk about last week, but I didn't get to see until recently, Iron Man 2.
Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Not a fan?
No. This is kind of the movie that in the span of the car ride home, it went from like, well, I didn't care for that, to wow, that was bad.
Interesting. So I'm the only one who outright really enjoyed it.
Well, that's the thing, Dave. I'm like confused. Like, what did you enjoy about this movie?
I just had fun with it. I don't know what...
Where did you have fun? Were you like high-fiving people during all the exposition scenes? Were you like, oh, he's talking about the tech of his suit. Sweet! Like... The movie was just so boring. Like, oh.
Wow. Okay.
It was such a snooze fest. The entire movie is just exposition.
Okay.
There was like no action. The whole movie was them just saying, this sets up the Avengers, or my suit is, and all these good actors are in it, and they all have like just thankless roles. Like, Terrence Howard could have been replaced by Marlon Wayans and would have been exactly the same.
Wow. Dang. There's a little vehemence behind that.
Yeah, and it's like... And I think the thing is, I saw, like, an actual movie here. Like, I think the movie had just stuck with Tony kind of dealing with his fame and Sam Rockwell and Mickey Rourke. You have a movie there. But it has to, like, have all this other shit in it, and it becomes so cluttered and boring and just... bogged down that I just and like think about Rockwell and Rourke's characters. They're these interesting characters who have these like interesting ties to Tony Stark, and you think there's these interesting relationships happening, but they're just resolved in the most anticlimactic ways. It's like I thought this movie was a total drop of the proverbial ball.
Wow. See, I thought the action at the end was absolutely amazing.
It was just very workmanlike.
Okay. All right, then. And you didn't dig the scene where Scarlett Johansson just destroyed the world?
I will say the two things I truly got from this movie were Sam Rockwell dancing and how Scarlett Johansson looked in her suit.
Okay. Well, dang. Don't hold back. That's all I ask. Don't hold back.
Okay. Next, I watched Fish Tank.
I'm so bummed you get to see that before I do.
Well, you can see it, Dave.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. How was it?
I was a little mixed about it. My problem was that it really wants to be like a neo-realist drama, but it's very just labored and heavy-handed and overly structured, where it almost would have just been better as like a glossy drama.
Interesting, because this is getting released by Criterion.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. But I guess kind of my another thing I wanted to bring up, I think after like Halloween 2 and the White Ribbon and now this, the use of horses as symbolism needs to like officially be retired.
Wow.
I am so tired of seeing a horse used as symbolism. It's like,
Okay, then.
Next, I watched Never Sleep Again, the Elm Street Legacy.
How was that?
I really enjoyed it.
Are you an Elm Street fan?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
So that goes into it. But I know a lot of people are like, 4 hours? But the thing is, they fly by. And it's pretty interesting, seeing a lot of these people like look back on the series, whether it's the actors or the directors, because a lot of the actors are actually pretty proud of the work, but a lot of the directors are like, that really could have been done better. So it's pretty interesting to watch. And it's pretty funny, some stuff when they get to part two and they talk about the whole gay angle of it. Like how basically all the director and all the actors in it deny had any idea if that was what was going on with the writers. Like, yeah, I totally wrote it as a gay thing. So
nice. So he just snuck one past everyone, theoretically. Yeah.
I think actually there's a story Bob Shea, who's the head of New Line, told where he wanted to have like a role as the the dad of one character, but the director said he wasn't good enough of an actor, so he gave him a small role as a guy who was in the S&M bar scene in the movie. So he told him to get his costume at this place called the Pleasure Chest.
Wow.
Like, Bob Shea had like no idea what this place was, so he took his like two young daughters to it with him to start like looking around, and the guy's like, maybe you should let them outside.
Daddy, what's that?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Wow. Next, I watched...
Before you move on, would you suggest it as a film for relative noobs to the series as well?
I think you'd get a little more out of it if you've seen it, or seen all of the movies. But if you were growing up during that phenomenon of all the movies, you'd probably like it.
Totally.
It's pretty... And a lot of even the actors they interview are very... Like, a lot of them are normal, but there are a few ones that are kind of weird. Like, there was this one girl, she was in Part 6, and all the other interviews are just people against a green screen talking normally, but she, for some reason, she's, like, dressed in, like, this goth costume, and she has, like, blood on her face, and she has, this girl who's always hugging her whenever she's cut to being interviewed. It's like, no one ever's like, why is this happening? It's really weird, but
okay,
it's a good watch. Next, I watched Francis Ford Coppola's One from the Heart. This was the movie he made after Apocalypse Now, when he wanted to make just a small little movie after the Titanic of a film that was Apocalypse Now. Okay. Well, not a Titanic that it sunk, but in that it took a lot out of him.
Yeah.
But this movie was famous because, of course, he wanted that. But the thing is, it's set in Las Vegas, and originally he was just going to shoot there and use all locations, but he wasn't satisfied with how he looked, so he built a Las Vegas set from scratch. And the budget went from, like, I think just a couple of million to about, like, 25 million.
Dope.
Yeah, and, of course, the movie, I think, made about, like, half a million dollars. So it's, like, one of the biggest flops of all time. And I think he spent about – I think every movie he's made since has been actually just trying to repay for that one movie. But I must say I really liked it. It's a little, I guess some critics have criticized it for being purely style over substance, but, and I can kind of agree with that, but when the style is so good, you kind of don't care, you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
And I think it's similar to Martin Scorsese's New York, New York, which was trying to be kind of like a satire of the old musical genre, but I think it's a far better film than that, because New York, New York kind of has the have its cake and eat it too problem of, like, wanting to satirize them but kind of just becoming one in the end. And this movie sort of only uses the artificiality of all those movies as kind of a stylistic backdrop and not the focal point. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It has a great score by Tom Waits. And Nastasia Kinski has a small role in it, and it still to this day blows my mind that she is actually the daughter of Klaus Kinski. Like, how something that beautiful came out of that is like, what the you know. But yeah, I wish Barry was here, because I know he's a big Coppola fan. I'm sure he'd be like, no, oh, I'm glad you liked it, Ethan. But
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. What did I watch next? I watched,
You make Barry sound like Jay Leno, I'm just saying.
Hey. Sorry.
That's okay.
Because I hate Jay Leno, and I don't hate Barry, so.
It's good to have that distinction, sir, I appreciate that.
Okay, next I watched Salesman. This is a documentary by the Maisel Brothers. It was pretty revolutionary because it essentially invented cinema verite, and basically it uses no talking heads or voiceover, and it just builds drama purely through watching these salesmen, so to speak. And It's pretty interesting. Next, I watched Werner Herzog's Invincible. This was the first narrative feature he made. I think after about a 10-year absence from them, he'd mostly made documentaries and shorts in the time being. And it's about this Jewish strongman who travels to Berlin to work at a nightclub owned by Tim Roth. And basically, the story could have been like a kind of like a Miramax-y Oscar bait movie, you know what I mean? But
Totally.
sort of just subtle differences that Herzog influences in the story and the direction and the writing really make it not that at all. And
It's in my watch list in like you. I just haven't gotten to watching it yet.
yeah, I'd recommend it. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, and it's good.
Okay.
I guess it's kind of unfair that on the cover of the movie they say Tim Roth, and it's like he's on the poster and he's first billed and everything, but the movie is not about him. Like, he's good in it, but the movie is entirely about this Jewish strong man.
Okay.
Next, I watched Serpico. Cross that off my list of shame.
Well done, well done.
I really enjoyed it, and I think it's actually a interesting kind of companion piece to the movie where we are talking about this week, because you can tell that Sidney Lumet is a big fan of Kurosawa.
But who
And
isn't?
well, yeah, but yeah, this is a I don't know what there really is to say about this movie that hasn't been said before. It's kind of a classic, you know. It's the posters on Dirk Diggler's wall.
And that's all you need to say.
Yeah, and I'll just, well, I guess the last thing I'll say about it is that just the various suits that Pacino wears throughout the movie, I really want at least one or two of those suits.
Okay. And is that your week, sir?
No, I got one more. The best film. I watched Wong Kar-wai's extraordinary film, Fallen Angels.
Okay, I haven't heard of this one.
Oh, it came out the year after Chungking Express, and it was originally supposed to be the third story in that film, but he decided to make its own separate entity. And it's two stories, well, or more multiple stories like Chungking Express. It's about a hitman on his last job and who's been separated from his partner, and he wants to reunite with her. And there's another story with this young mute kid who's kind of has these run-ins with the law, and he's experiencing love for the first time. And this movie is just so moody and atmospheric that it's like, from the very first frame, it hooks you in. And it's sort of hard to describe because it is so visceral in a way, but I think this movie is absolutely amazing and the best film he's ever made.
Very cool.
I read a quote from Sight and Sound magazine that said how it's the most exciting film of the year because it takes every risk known to filmmaking and succeeds triumphantly. And I think that's a perfect way to describe it. So,
Very cool to check it out.
yeah, that was finally, that was what I watched.
10 minutes in. It's all good, dude. It was good stuff. You know, you seriously, you had higher quality film watching than I did. I guess I'll do TV first. Watched Glee. I'm starting to kind of turn on the show a little bit just because
Why?
they're concentrating on the wrong characters.
Yeah, that was the thing. I still like the show. Well, I haven't actually watched the last few episodes, but I like the show the most kind of in its like first three or four episodes when it was just centered around like a few characters. But when it started getting more and more, I was kind of like, eh, but I still like it.
Well, the problem is that I don't mind if I wish they would develop the background characters more than they're starting to. It's just that they're concentrating too much on like Rachel and Finn, and Rachel needs to get hit by a bus in the worst way. And I think it's just because they're using her too much. They've got a really rich cast of characters, like Brittany. Every time she shows up, she says something just absolutely odd, wrong, and beautiful. You just never know what you're going to get. I mean, you just might get.
Did you know that dolphins are just gay sharks?
You know, it's just
Yeah.
it's some brilliance there. A lot of it is because they're using the same people over and over and over, and you kind of get sick of their voices. And when you hear
Yeah.
the other characters sing it, it kind of picks the show up a bit. So, but again, then again, this week, directed by Joss Whedon, guest starring
Oh.
Neil Patrick Harris, it's going to be a good episode. So
Nice.
yeah, Supernatural season 5 finally ended this week, and boy, did it end quite well. I don't think they need to do a season 6, even though they are. The way they ended season 5 was a perfect cap for me. and I'm kind of worrying about how much season six could suck.
It sounds a lot like Buffy, because season five of that, in fact, was like a perfect end, but then like Whedon was like, well, and they did another two seasons, so...
Well, in this case, it's interesting because they had it planned out as a five-year arc, and they finished that, and then they got renewed for a sixth season, and the executive producer has jumped ship. So he's saying that he's going to be involved with the stories, and it's still going to be good, but I worry that it's going to suck. Chuck, on the other hand, is taking a very interesting approach. A couple episodes, they had Morgan introducing it as if it was Heart to Heart, the TV show from the 80s about the spy couple, and that's pretty much where they're going with this in a very fun way.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a blast. Adam Baldwin still rules. Yeah, they're finding a way to give it new life instead of trying to stretch out the whole Chuck and Sarah, sorry, spoiler, their relationship for, you know, 8 years, and will they or won't they? They just kind of answer the question, and then they move on with the show from there, which is kind of cool. Kind of appreciate
that. That's good.
Yes. And then I saw, wow, some really crappy stuff and some really good stuff. I guess I'll just do the crap first. Wednesday was our anniversary, so I took the day off, and we just crashed out and watched crappy movies on the Drive-In Classics channel on our Roku, which is glorious. We saw this movie called Silent Night, Bloody Night. Not Deadly Night, Bloody Night. Silent Night, Deadly Night is a masterpiece compared to this, well, piece.
Garbage Day!
Oh, it totally is. It is a crappy movie that makes no sense. You get to the end and you're like, oh, it's going to be this ending. That's a really, really stupid ending. And yeah, it was. I'm not even going to ruin it because it's just so idiotic and convoluted. Then we saw, what was it, Invasion of the B-Girls? I don't know if you've ever heard of this one.
Is it about girls who happen to be bees and they invade?
Kind of, yes, yes. It was the first exploitation film Steph's ever seen, and she picked it out, so it was her own fault. Again, gloriously awful. Written by the same guy who wrote Wrath of Khan and several other really good sci-fi stories down the road, but this one, ooh, steaming pile.
Yeah. Well, everyone's got to start somewhere, you know?
And boy, you know, he started, this was his first writing credit, and it's fair to say he only went up from there.
Well, speaking, actually, I was talking about the Elm Street documentary, but, you know, Frank Darabont has a writing credit on Number 3, so.
Wow. I can't wait to see his version of The Walking Dead on AMC. That's going to be amazing. Wow, that made for a very good segue, I'm going to say. This wasn't a crappy movie, but I got to expose Steph for the first time to the classic Night of the Living Dead.
Nice.
That movie still holds up really well.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah. The only problem is she's found her niche in that if it's a horrible movie that isn't actually scary, she can handle a horror movie. This one I had to kind of give her the heads up as to what was coming, and she guessed the ending. And she's like, that's messed up. And then it happened. She's like, oh, that's really messed up, which is a sign of a good film, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to the crap, I went back and revisited the first R-rated movie my parents actually like. Were like, hey, you need to see this movie because it's so cool. Why that movie was Iron Eagle, I really don't know, but it is such glorious amounts of 80s cheese. You just can't help but love that movie.
I know that David Gordon Green, I remember reading an interview with him. He said he saw all the Iron Eagles in the theater, but he walked out of Top Gun, so.
Wow. I didn't watch after the first one because I heard what happened in the first 5 minutes of the second one and just really wasn't interested. But Louis Gossett Jr. is like chewing scenery like it's candy. It's just he's having so much fun with that movie. It's a blast to watch. Let's see. Then I think I've only got two things left. I'll save the really good one for the end. But, you know, we had one of our loyal listeners, friends, everything, occasional guest even, one Mr. Martin Wurst. His birthday was yesterday on Saturday. And in his honor, I did have to go ahead and sit down and pop in my copy of The Marine.
Highway Patrol, this is John Triton. You have officers down, multiple assailants. They have a hostage. It's my wife.
We should do that for every movie we watch.
What, grab a clip?
Yeah, so like when I'm talking about Fallen Angels, we can just listen to people talking in Chinese.
Totally, and that would make we could do every single episode just about what we watched that week.
Yeah.
But this movie really does pay a great homage to the 80s action movie with a wink and a smile, except for John Cena, who has no idea that it's funny. We should actually do a full episode on that, shouldn't we?
We should. Well, I think we have to wait until he at least does one more movie, though, because I think the John Cena canon is a little slight at the moment.
Yeah, you've only got this in 12 rounds, and 12 rounds just flat out sucked as opposed to sucking so much it was good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally, oh, good Lord. You know, Shakespeare's not something I've ever really have been able to get into, especially the thick drama stuff. But I decided to give it a shot. We rented from Netflix the David Tennant, Patrick Stewart version of Hamlet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 10 Things I Hate About You.
No. I've seen that, though. Didn't hate it, but yeah, that's a whole other story. No, this was... I'm going to confess my ignorance and my lack of culture in saying that I did fall asleep during it.
Well, if you had a long day, man, it's cool.
Yeah, and it was a three-hour movie.
Yeah.
All that said, amazing performances, great sets. If you are a Shakespeare fan in any way, shape, or form, you absolutely owe it to yourself to check out this version of Hamlet, because it is astounding how good it is. So, yeah. All right. Shall we just go ahead and move into what came out in theaters this week?
Why not?
Why the heck not? All right. Well, crap, crap, and crap. All right. We've got Just Right with Queen Latifah and, I don't know, yeah, Letters to Juliet and Robin Hood. Neither of us saw any of these, did we?
I was going to go see Robin Hood yesterday. Then I saw my dad was shoveling gravel in the driveway, and I decided to help him with that instead.
Oh, so you're being a good son.
Yeah.
Good on you, sir. That, and you figured you'd save yourself the $8, right?
Yeah.
Like, the best review I've read of this is that it didn't completely suck. From people that I trust. I should preface it with that.
And we have a caller, yeah. But usually even... Oh, fuck.
Do you need to grab it?
No.
Okay, then just talk through it. It's all good. It's okay, we're still recording.
What was I going to... Okay, it's like even on bad movies, usually there's like one like person who's like, oh, I loved it. But you're right. Like the best reviews of this I've read have been like 3 out of 4, like generous, so...
Yeah, well, here's the question. What did Ben Lyons think of it? Oh, wait, no one cares anymore. Sorry.
Oh!
Yeah, that's just... This week, I would, yeah, go see something else instead. I don't know what, but check the Dollar Theater. I don't know. And then on DVD this week, we have got Invictus, Valentine's Day, one of the biggest disappointments I know Barry's seen in a theater in a long time.
Wait, whoa. He had expectations for it?
Well, okay. I guess he went in with none and was still disappointed.
Oh, that's saying something.
So, yeah, I think like halfway through he leaned over to Julian and was like, do you like any of these characters at all? And the answer was no. So, yeah. We've got Extraordinary Measures coming out this Tuesday. We talked about that last week. Don't need to talk about it anymore. The Messenger, the highly underrated, at the top of my Netflix queue, The Messenger, I should say.
That's good.
You liked it, right?
Yeah, a lot. I'm just glad you put it on your queue.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, I keep rubbing that in because I shouldn't do that since you don't have Netflix. It's kind of cruel.
Nah. Well, at least you're not mentioning Netflix Watch Instant.
Well, that's later. I don't know. Yeah. Then we have got Outlander. Wow, that's kind of a crappy movie. Okay.
Didn't that come out like a year ago?
Yeah. And it's just now getting out to DVD. I don't know why. Yeah. Walkabout on Criterion Blu-ray and DVD is coming out. We've got,
nice.
Yes, a re-release of the remake of Appleseed, the anime flick that's actually pretty cool. I can't wait to see what it looks like on Blu-ray. It's got to be gorgeous. For the 80s children, we've got The Greatest American Hero, the complete series. It's like $30 on Amazon. How can you go wrong for that? And Defenders of the Earth, the complete series, 65 episodes or $25. Again, kind of hard to go wrong with Flash Gordon and the Phantom, and it's a really, really fun show. We have dueling crap titles of the week. We'll do the more obvious one once again. It's really sad when Jackie Chan is our crap title of the week, but The Spy Next Door does come out. But our true winner, the only winner, Mutant Vampire Zombies from the Hood, starring C. Thomas Howell. I can't wait to watch that movie.
To be honest, I think I'd like that way more than The Spy Next Door.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it screams... You know exactly what you're getting just from the title.
Yeah.
It's all good. So, yeah. All right, let's move on to some news. We don't have a whole lot this week, which is good since we took plenty of time on what we watched this week. What have you got, sir? You can bookend my story.
I have Andrew Dominik. He's the director of The Assassination of Jesse James and Chopper. He his next project will be a Marilyn Monroe biopic starring Naomi Watts.
What do you think about there being these dueling biopics going?
Well, I guess we should mention Michelle Williams is also potentially going to be in a Marilyn Monroe thing with, about her, like a week she's been with Laurence Olivier. And the thing is, I like Michelle Williams a lot, but the guy who's directing that's like some BBC miniseries thing. And this is, you know, a guy who directed one of the best movies of the decade. So I'm kind of looking forward to this one more.
Well, can you really see either actress really pulling off Marilyn Monroe, though?
Yeah, I actually can, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, who would you have?
I can't think of anyone who could. That's kind of the thing. I don't know. Who knows? Do we really need a Marilyn Monroe biopic, I guess, is my question. Because we know where it's going to end.
Well, she's a pretty interesting person, though.
This is true. This is true. And she'll sing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. And how can you go wrong with that?
And Andrew Dominik, I'll watch anything he does. So
fair enough. And you know, speaking of someone who anything he does, I'll watch. For some reason, when I think David Fincher, I don't think Disney movies. But he's doing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Well, let's see. He has the Social Network coming out this year, right?
Yes.
And I know he's doing Girl with a Dragon Tattoo next.
I thought that just came out.
Well, he's doing the remake.
Oh, okay. Really?
He's doing an American remake. Okay. And doesn't he have like – he has like 20 movies in development, doesn't he? He's like one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like if you look at his IMDb page, you look at the in-development thing, it's like a whole crap load of things. So to be honest, I don't totally – think that this movie will happen, to be honest.
Really? You don't think with Disney coming calling that he wouldn't end up having to drop some of the other stuff to get this rolling sooner?
No, I again, it's like
he's not that kind of guy to do that.
Yeah, it's like, well, things, it has like a 1 in 20 chance of happening, you know?
Because
he has 20 other things in development, so
fair enough. However, I will say this is a leaps and bounds improvement over Mick G.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he want Will Smith as Captain Nemo?
Something like that. Just toss that noise right out the window. Yeah. So what's your last story, sir?
I don't know. Has this been confirmed? For all I know, this is just a rumor, but apparently the Wachowski brothers want to make a hard-R gay romance about an American soldier and an Iraqi that will coincide with the war.
This just screams publicity stunt to me. I don't know why, but it does.
It sounds like Bound.
But in Iraq during a war.
Yeah. Well,
maybe it'll have bullet time.
You know, I think it'd be an interesting change of pace for them. It wouldn't be like a humongous, you know, $100 million movie.
That's true. That's very true. It'd be interesting to see what they came up with, yes.
So I'd be up for it.
Yeah. Brokeback Desert. I don't know. Something like that. I don't know. That was a bad joke. Don't mind that joke, folks. Just pretend it didn't happen. I think we're just going to go ahead and take a break while we can before I just take a flying leap or something. So, yeah, we'll be back.
Tonight, 11 on KWTF News, unemployment rates reach all-time low.
Middle Eastern officials reporting peace talks could end within the week.
And do you like puppies?
Don't believe their lies. You think you should be afraid of Osama Hasbin? You think you should be afraid of losing your job? What you should truly be afraid of is out there, and we are fighting a losing battle to keep you safe. Zombies are real and they are coming. Then you will know what it means to truly be afraid.
Tune in tonight for our weekend forecast.
I'm Tara O'Hara.
I'm Vic Beretta.
See you tonight, KWTF News at 11.
And now back to your show.
Visit www.ontheedgeofdarkness.com.
And we are back. I didn't play that ad either just because I'm in an episode of On the Edge of Darkness. It's a pretty decent little audio drama, so check it out. This week, however, we're wrapping up our Kurosawa series with what is definitely a departure in his general, what he's generally known for in making films. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'd say so.
The film is called High and Low. It was made in 1968, and while Kurosawa is mostly known for making films that are either samurai flicks outright or at least take place in feudal Japan. This is kind of a hard-boiled crime noir film that's just... It knocked me on my ass, honestly. I did not expect this movie to be this good. This might be my favorite Kurosawa film, actually.
Well, my favorite Kurosawa film is also one that isn't one of his samurai ones. Aikiru is my favorite Kurosawa film.
Okay.
And a connective thread between these two films is that a fact I saw talked about by Robert Osborne from Turner Classic Movies is how Kurosawa had made all these samurai movies, essentially, and they were big successes. Everyone loved them. But he felt it was important to show what was actually going on in modern Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So to show like how post-war Japan was like and how it was getting along, what were the conditions facing the people and such, you know.
Yeah. And I guess I should say what the story is. The High and Low is the story of a man who's getting ready to make a gigantic corporate move, essentially perform a hostile takeover of the company he works for. And his son is kidnapped. Or is it? A very interesting mix-up happens, and he still finds himself faced with the same moral dilemma of, do I go through this with this, or do I let a child die? And what really surprised me is that they actually solve that portion of it, like, halfway through the movie.
Yeah, and it's, the thing is, the title is there for a reason. High refers to the high class as seen in that half of the movie, and low refers to the low class as seen in the second half of the movie, which is entirely a procedural drama finding the kidnappers by the police.
It reminded me a lot of Zodiac.
Yeah, I was going to actually say the same thing. And I watched Serpico this week, and watching a procedural drama, you can see lots of things, how it influenced that and such. So yeah, that half, the procedural half, was by far my favorite part of the movie. Like, I love that part of the movie.
Yeah, Steph isn't like the biggest, you know, procedural fan or just foreign film fan in general. Just she doesn't tend to have the patience for it, but she got it into the movie about a half hour, 45 minutes in, and then sat there and watched the rest of it with me. And did you find yourself wondering if there was a far more sinister conclusion to this film?
Kind of. In fact, I was going to say, didn't the second half in a way remind you a little bit of M?
Kinda, yeah, absolutely.
When they were tracking the guy, it made me think of Peter Lorre. Or Peter Lorre, I don't know how you say his name.
Lorre.
But,
yeah, Peter Lorre. What really surprised me was the fact that, you know, you think of Kurosawa as this very high-class director, but like you said, he wanted to show life the way it was. And when they go into that club and they're tailing the kidnapper, that's all I will say, that was just really kind of cool how they did the club and how I was struck by just how many non-Japanese people were in that club.
Yeah.
like maybe half the crowd. It was kind of interesting.
And I guess we should mention there's a whole anti-drug slant to this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I really appreciated was the fact that a lot of times in these kind of movies, cops can be portrayed as either the complete badass or the complete moron. This film just really depicted the entire police department as very capable and hardworking, just trying to do the right thing. Which
yeah, just
cool.
just normal people. Like, that's what Zodiac does, or All the President's Men, or any of those kinds of movies. They just, that's the thing I love about the procedural drama, is just watching kind of like men at work, you know what I mean? Not the band Men at Work, but...
Nothing wrong with them either, but you know.
sorry.
The thing that Barry loves to bring up every single time is that this movie opens up with a bunch of men talking about women's shoes and fashion. And I think that was, do you think that was a conscious choice by Kurosawa to say, hey, you know what, this is a very stark point to let you know, this is not your average film by me?
Well, I think that too, and kind of he's setting up his characters too. Like,
absolutely.
That they're so like it is kind of silly that they're so like, it's like, women would never wear these shoes because blah, blah, blah. So it's like he's saying that these men are so into, I guess, men, because it's all men.
Yes.
They're so like into such a feminine thing. And then you see his wife, too, who's like dressed in kind of a very, like, she has like a very ancient kind of way of dressing. She's not
very traditional. Yes.
Yeah. So it's showing where their place was and such.
Yeah. So did you think it was, oh man, I'm sure within the first 15 minutes you had your idea of the group behind the conspiracy, shall we say?
Yeah.
If there's one thing that I was a little bit disappointed with, it was who ended up being the kidnapper. I'll put it that way. Just because of how involved all the characters were in the film, I was a little bummed that it wasn't someone who had a more intimate knowledge of him or had a relationship with
Yeah, I will say why I'm more of a fan of the procedural half than the first half is because I think the first half, while it's good, it's a little one note. You know what I mean?
It's ransom.
Yeah, it's just like,
give me back my chauffeur, like, son. Yeah.
Yeah, but instead in that Japanese, like, hold up, hold up, hold up. So, you know.
Did you find yourself wishing that the kidnapper was a little more involved with the main character, or was it just, you know, it was just a good story in general and you were cool with leaving it at that?
Well, maybe the final scene would have been a little more powerful but I didn't have like a huge problem with it.
Oh no, it's a very minor problem.
Yeah, so.
I think it's an astounding film that everybody needs to see. Like, I think this is actually a really good entry film for people to get introduced to Kurosawa.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Wow, there you go. All right. So Jay Leno is in the building. Did you, like, watch the Conan O'Brien thing at Google over the week or something? Or
you mean the 60 Minutes interview?
No, he did the thing at Google as well.
No, I didn't see that, actually.
Oh, yeah, he did, like, a 45-minute talk. That's, Mark over one of our fans posted on his page. And, oh, congratulations on your engagement, sir, by the way. Yeah, but it's a really interesting discussion because he's breaking the moderator's balls like crazy in the first 15 minutes. He's like, you're wishing I hadn't come right now, aren't you? It was awesome. Well worth checking out. I'll post it.
Okay.
On Facebook or something. But yeah. Anyhow, back to High and Low. Yeah, I think because a lot of people just think of samurai epic film and just really kind of get turned off the idea this is at least a more modern placed film. That still shows off just what a talented filmmaker he is. And I really think this is not a bad place to start for people. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then. We have no idea who we're going to be talking about next, but we'll figure it out.
Can we talk about Lars von Trier?
Probably not.
Why not?
I don't know. I think I'm picking the next one. I have an idea who it is, but I want to run it by you and Barry first.
Okay.
One of the biggies that we just need to do sooner or later, but do more of his abstract films. I'm sure you can guess who it is already, but we'll talk about it off the air.
Okay.
But I'm curious what everyone else's favorite Kurosawa films are, because he does have a very extensive body of work in general. So yeah, shoot us an email, podcast, Dave, Barry, Ethan, all at screengeeks.com, and we'll read some of those on the air. Fun will be had. At some point the voicemail line will be coming back, I promise. It's just not right away. Yeah. So shall we talk about what's in theaters this week?
Why not?
All right. So we've got if there's ever a time I really want to hold a studio to their word and, like, if I hear IMOB one more time, I'm going to burn the movie studio to the ground kind of thing. Shrek Forever After, please let this be the last freaking chapter of this pile of crap.
I will say the part in the trailer with Craig Robinson as an ogre made me laugh.
And that's probably the one time you'd laugh in the whole movie.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, I kept, like, when I got home, I saw that trailer from Iron Man. Then when I got home, I actually watched that trailer, like, five more times, but just that one part, because I found it so funny.
Yeah, the problem is that your soul's going to be sucked so dry by the time it gets to that point, you won't have the will to laugh anymore.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to let you talk about MacGruber, because everything I've seen of MacGruber just makes me want to hurt small woodland creatures, because it looks just not for me.
You know, really? I think it looks kind of funny.
I think it's the whole thing of, like, whenever you grow up, that cast of SNL is cool, and everyone newer sucks. It's not that it's true, it's that just that's your perspective.
I guess, but it's not much like the visual or the gross out gags in this. It's just kind of like the 80s jokes in it that kind of look funny. Like, when he's like, I saw this clip where he's like playing a saxophone in a tree, or when just there's this shot in the trailer where it's like him and there's like all these like big like 80s like he's like huge guy with muscles. It's like just perfectly out of an 80s action movie. Like that's the stuff that made me laugh. So I don't know. That's probably not enough to get me in the theater. But
that was gonna be my question. So you're gonna take that one for the team, or
if like Greenberg or Exit to the Gift Shop aren't playing by next week, maybe.
Fair enough, fair enough. And there's no way I'm going to watch Shrek. It's just not going to happen. After the turd, I am done.
Just watch the Craig Robinson part in the trailer again and again, okay?
There we go. Maybe I will even watch that. Perhaps. We shall see. All right, let's talk about DVDs that are coming out next week. It's actually a pretty decent and interesting week next week. We've got True Blood Season 2 coming out. Most of these are going to be on Blu-ray as well as DVD. We've got Dear John. Okay, that's our crap title of the week, probably. Oh, well. The Road, Leverage Season 2. I think that's just getting ready. Oh, no, that's going to be like 5 days after the premiere of Leverage Season 3. That's why that's coming out. Awesome show. Check it out. We've got a 50th anniversary edition of Spartacus coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, I believe. We've got Stagecoach, a Criterion edition of the John Ford, John Wayne classic. I really am curious to see how this looks. Yeah.
Yeah.
got an interesting film finally coming to Blu-ray and obscenely cheap. Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. If you buy it from Amazon.com right now, it's $10.99. It's kind of hard to go wrong at that price. It really is. I already own the DVD, otherwise I'd be jumping on it. Then we have got Mystery Team coming to DVD and Blu-ray, which I've heard good things about, but I've missed the screening when it was in Denver.
I'm a big Derek Comedy fan, so I'm stoked for that one.
Sweet. And then we've got The Guild Season 3 coming to DVD, and then a trifecta of interesting films coming to Blu-ray. We've got Django, which, that's an odd movie. It's fun, but it's odd.
I've been meaning to see it.
It's worth watching at least once, absolutely. And then finally, Troma's starting to roll out some of their catalog titles in Blu-ray. We have got Tromeo and Juliet and The Class of Nukem High both coming to Blu-ray. I don't know how great they'll look, because I don't know how great the original elements are, but it should be interesting. I don't know. So if you've got anything you want to add before we wrap this bad boy up?
Well, watch Old Dogs if you haven't yet.
At some point, I will finally get around to watching it. I just don't know when that's going to be. I don't know. Wow. All right. Well, you know, that's just wrong. If you want to shoot us an email, by all means do. Email us at podcast, Ethan, Dave, or Barry, all at screengeeks.com. And we'll be back next week starting up a new series with someone famous or not, or I don't know. Anyhow, until then, this is Dave.
This is Ethan.
Bye.
I'm pretty sure my cat's been reading my diary.